This is American Real.
I am Roger Brooks. Welcome to the show.
This is American Real TV.
There's so much to talk to you about.
Where everyone...
You are a true inspiration.
...has...
We're all trying to do our part to change the world.
...a story.
What's your mission? What do you want your legacy to be? You have such a great story. I cannot wait to share it.
Welcome to the American Real family.
I cannot wait to air this episode.
And now, here's your host, Roger Brooks.
Being in charge of a police drug control unit is not easy work. In fact, to many, it's a calling. It involves careful detective work, extreme attention to detail, and lots of drug raids. In fact, it's been reported that in the US, there's more than 40,000 drug raids each year. When raids take place, often there's confiscation of weapons, drugs, and cash, lots of it. But where does all that cash go? Sometimes it goes missing. Crossing the Lines is a crime novel based on a true story. The year is 1979. A drug dealer and convicted felon tells the story of a drug raid on his house during which he claims money was stolen by the cops, as he told it to an eager local TV investigative reporter. For the first time in 20 years, the cop is charged. And with us today is the author of that book, best-selling author, Michael Regenberg, who is also an award-winning journalist and a PR executive. Michael, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Roger. It's great to be here.
So, wow, this story that you've written is quite the story, and I can't wait to get into how this all came to be. As I'm starting to put all the pieces together myself, I had a chance to go back and read the prologue this morning, and it really brings you right into the scene from the start. So I cannot wait to talk about it. But start us off. Bring us back to 1979 and how all this came to be, if you could kind of set the stage for us.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. It remains crazy. And obviously, it stayed in my head for, you know, decades. You know, this guy, I mean, and he really was a bad guy, but he was a charmer. And, you know, he came to us, to me, and we sat down and he talked about what had happened. And, you know, and he wanted a story done. And now, I mean, the more I look back on it, I think, really, what was his motivation? Why would a guy who was a convicted felon really want this to happen? Why would he want this story to happen? I'm not sure I ever really, you know, figured out the answer to it. But it was crazy. And once I did it, we won a regional Emmy Award for the story, and I left the station shortly after that, but it stayed in my head because all these characters were in fact characters. I mean, his lawyer was a character who just actually recently died. I felt badly because he'd given me all the documents, all the legal documents from all these cases, and he was helping in the beginning, and I felt guilty that he wasn't here to see the actual results. But yeah, so that's, and my boss at the time at the TV station was quite willing to let me go off on my own and do this story, which is also amazing. So, you know, and some of the things that I did, I'm sure he might not have approved of if he'd actually known about them. But
yeah, and I think about today, would the reporter even have the freedom to do right. Those kinds of things with, you know, everything being so urgent these days with the news.
Right.
Just amazing how that all came together. But so bring us back to that scene. Like, so when you met with this gentleman, what was that like?
Well, he was charming, you know, and the story, I mean, we met in the novel, it's a different meeting place, but we met at a hotel, at a Marriott hotel, you know, in the dining room, and he told me this story, and it was, you know, from the moment he told me, you know, and he was a charmer. I mean, he was slick in his own way. You know, the kind of, I describe it in the novel, but, you know, the kind of guy who in Boston, he looks like he's from the North End, you know, he's got his collar open and it's, you know, jewelry. But he, I mean, the story was, you know, he knew exactly sort of what he wanted me to get out of the meeting, right? He wanted me to take away this idea that the cops had stolen from him. And I did. I mean, it worked. So, you know, and I stayed in touch with him. You know, some of it was crazy because I also met him. I mean, in the novel, I meet him, you know, early in the morning at this diner, but I did meet him at a diner, you know, several times, not early in the morning, but or late at night. You know, so he had his special places. And, you know, he was, I mean, he had definitely hooked his lawyer on cocaine. I mean, and it was, you know, the thing about cocaine was it was everywhere at the time, you know, at the station, it was everywhere. And so it was, you know, that's who he was.
And how did you know he was telling the truth? And was he?
Well, because, I did get to the assistant district attorney who was working on the case. So, you know, he was prosecuting. Off the record, he did tell me some of the things that were going on. So it wasn't like I was making it up from whole cloth. I mean, the novel is fiction because there was a lot I didn't know. I still don't know. I don't know really what the cops were doing at any given moment, but between his lawyer and the assistant district attorney, I got the drug dealer, I got the story.
And how do they distinguish between personal property and cash, say, that comes from the sale of drugs?
What do you mean? I'm not sure what you...
So when in the story you say that his cash was stolen, correct?
Well, that's what
Is that what he sued after?
Yeah.
And I guess to the law, isn't that money part of drug money, or is that considered personal money or personal property?
Right. So, you know, I mean, ultimately the cop was found innocent, right? When it came before a jury. So, I mean, and there were two trials, one before a judge where he was found guilty. So I think the notion was that he had stolen, you know, you had to believe a drug dealer that this money was there and that it was taken from him and that that was illegal, right? That they were taking money that was his. So he had to prove that, or his lawyer had to prove that, or the assistant district attorney had to prove that, which he did well in the trial before the judge. It happens all the time. It continues to happen all the time. And the assistant district attorney, was willing to help, you know, sort of confirm that in different ways. So.
And when you say it happens all the time, what exactly happens all the time?
That, you know, bad cops steal from their victims. I mean, you know, whether it's weapons or whether it's drugs or whether it's money. I mean, I believe it happens even today. Not all cops, obviously. Most cops are good cops, but, you know, there are some that aren't, and it's those cops. So,
yeah. So I'm very interested in how you turned this real life story into a book of fiction. And I would love to know a little bit about the process that you underwent. This is your first book. So walk us through that as far as how did you frame all this up and how long did it take? All those, you know, fun questions.
Yeah. So it took 6 years. It was a long time. I'm lucky because here in Boston, we have something called, I mean, it's obvious it's a national organization. It's called Grub Street, and it's a writer's center. And I took a class called Jumpstarting Your Novel. And, you know, there were probably, I don't know, 10 or 15 folks. and we each had our own, you know, book in process or starting. And it was great because we could also, you know, talk to each other. After the class was done, I remember that there were two other members of the class, and we would meet and go through, you know, pages of each other and give each other critiques. And that was incredibly, you know, important and valuable, you know, starting off right away. And then I also went to a number of also Grub Street has something called the Muse in the Marketplace. So it's a conference that they have every year where they have authors who are speaking. They also have agents, you know, that you can pitch to. And, you know, they're selling books and they're doing all those things. So I would go to that, you know, certainly to listen to the authors. I wasn't, you know, far enough along to try to sell it to anybody. And then I went to other retreats. I went to the San Miguel Literary Conference in Mexico. And that was where I met this woman who, you know, taught a session. Her name is Ellen Sussman, and she has the Sonoma Writers Conference. And it was COVID when that happened. So rather than getting to go to Sonoma, it was online, but it too was really valuable because I think we were doing first chapter at the time. So, you know, we were talking about our first chapters. And again, there were probably like 20 people where we were also giving feedback to them and they were giving feedback to us. And it was over several days. So when there was a critique, it might be that the next day we could, you know, refashion it and present it again. And, you know, and that worked too. Then there were a couple of others that I went to as well. One was called Career Authors Retreat. And that was when my book was much further along. I want to say it was like in 2019 or 2018 or something like that. And that was right here. And one of the people that continues to be really helpful to me in a lot of different ways is Hank Phillippe Ryan. So Hank has written now 15 novels. She continues to be a reporter when I was also a reporter. So that's how I knew her. But I mean, she gave me the name of my editor and proofreader, and she was also at this conference. So again, you know, you got critiques back. That also might have been first chapter, as I recall. So it was valuable input that you were getting from other authors. The editor was also at that conference. So that made a difference. I mean, the fact that it took 6 years was, you know, I'm not sure, because I was pretty good about, you know, writing a few pages every day. But again, it takes a long time. Or it took me a long time.
Well, it's fascinating. It sounds like you really immersed yourself in all of it, right? Taking it all in, attending these conferences and whatnot. So congratulations on doing that. You know, many people talk about wanting to write a book, and you know how much work goes into it. So yeah. I commend you for doing that. And we had the opportunity to work with you on the publishing side. So that was a lot of fun, and we were happy to help you, you know, bring the book to life.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad I found you.
No, it's a total win-win. So, okay. So now how do you, in the process of, I guess, forming your outline and, you know, writing the story, you obviously have the story in your head. How do you turn that into fiction? How are you coming up with your characters? And, you know, you mentioned the attorney, you know, I'm sure you had a lot of good visuals to start with.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was kind of, I'm not quite sure. Writing it as fiction gave me a lot of room, right, to create characters, which I did, and create events. I mean, I didn't know what the cops were doing, you know, from a day to, there were things that I did No, from the lawyer, for example. I mean, there's one scene where the lawyer tells me that these cops went to an auto dealership in a town near Boston, and they all got Cadillacs, right? So do I know that that was true? I don't know that that was true, but hey,
it makes freedom.
Sure, right, yeah, it makes for a good story. Mm-hmm. Actually two of the members of the drug control unit, one ended up dead. He got killed. He was in a car and it was another situation. Another ended up in jail for corruption, not with this, but you know. So, you know, some of the characters I kind of knew generally, and it just allowed me to, I think, create both these situations and the characters. I became friendly with the head of the drug control unit. And he was a good guy, and he, I think, was honest, and I don't think he had a clue as to what his men were necessarily doing, or he, you know, chose to look the other way. So being creative about the story, I mean, some of which was kind of crazy, setting up a situation where the drug cops try to get cocaine or money from drug dealers, and they, one of them gets shot in the process, right? And they have to go to the hospital. And I made that up, and it was liberating to be able to just create these characters and create the story and bring it to life in a way that I thought made a good story.
Yeah. So. No, and I noticed too, you brought in a lot of Boston themes,
right,
into the book, whether it was Dunkin' Donuts, or different actual places. So that must have been fun as well, I'm sure, being from the area and pulling all that into your story.
Yeah, I mean, the editor also, in a couple of, when he first read it, he said, you got to bring more drama into it. So, I mean, I've got a scene where the reporter is walking down Comm Ave, and yes, did I have an apartment in Comm Ave, Commonwealth Avenue? Yes, I did. But, walking down the street and having this car, and there's, these guys, and, they say something to her. And that's all made up, but it allowed me, knowing, where it was and sort of all the points that, people in Boston can relate to, and others who, like Boston can relate to. I think, it's sort of, and not to compare myself, but it's, Dennis Lehane-ish, if you will, to bring Boston to the reader.
Yeah, no, it brought a smile to my face when I saw that one of them was wearing a Boston Red Sox cap.
Right, of course.
That's
the
great.
Patriots were no big deal at the time.
That's right. And talked about the editor. How did you keep the tension alive throughout?
That was one of the things that even the prologue, it was the editor who told me that I needed the prologue to make sure that the reader knew that the drug raid actually happened. Hmm. So, he gave me those, suggestions to improve it. What was the question?
Well, just, how you kept the tension alive.
Yeah, I mean, I kept sort of going back to the story, but making sure that the drama of the cops in particular, but also the drug dealer and his wife and, sister. I mean, I don't know anything about his wife and sister really, but, to sort of keep that, the reporter meets with the sister and his wife, or just creating these situations like a cop getting shot just gave me, it was, you know, I had the freedom to create the story. And I wanted to keep the tension alive. I didn't want it just to be, you know, reporter talking to X or reporter talking to Y. There had to be more of, it had to be more sort of focused on the cops. What were the cops doing? So.
And as people are listening to this and they may say, oh, you know, I have an idea for a book, maybe based on a true story that happened. What advice would you give them on how to even begin the process?
Well, again, I mean, I think places like Grub Street are really, really valuable. I mean, because you can take classes with authors, with people who know what they're doing, and give you both the inspiration, but also some of the skill set that you need to, you know, go forward. And like with Grub Street, I mean, there's all kinds of courses that you can take. And you know, some of these other writers' conferences where you hear both from authors, but you also hear from, you know, people who are beginning the process or in the middle of the process. And I think it teaches you valuable skills, to take whatever your inspiration, because it's a scary process, right? To say, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write a book. Like, how do I even begin? I don't even know where to start. So I just think that using the resources that are out there, not necessarily just putting yourself away in a basement and trying to come up with this, you know, a story, was incredibly helpful for me.
And once you had your mind wrapped around, you know, the story, and you started attending these different sessions, did you have a particular writing space? I know, you know, a lot of people talk about your writing environment. How did that work for you?
Yeah, in where I live, in my house, my basement is my office. And that's where I would go. And I would go down and I would spend, I think I would set aside at least a couple of hours a day and say, okay, I'm going to write, you know, and I had the novel in front of me, or the, you know, work in progress in front of me. And I would pretty much go step by step or page by page. You know, I didn't necessarily jump from, okay, I, you know, today I'm going to write about blah, blah, blah. So I tried to
sequence.
I tried to take this story right in sequence, because that was also helpful to me. And it that was how, in a, again, that was how it, I would gave myself permission to create these, you know, these fictional stories.
And were some scenes more challenging than others for you to write? For example, is it harder or easier for you to write dialogue versus, say, showing the action?
I actually like writing dialogue. I think the tougher scenes were the scenes with the reporter, because I didn't want it to be just me, right? I had to let go. It was a fictional character that, yes, was kind of based on things that I did, but I also wanted to give her, I mean, you know, she doesn't look like me, she doesn't, it gave me freedom to create a character that started with me, but then, you know, evolved into another character. And I like that, you know, because it wasn't me. And so I, you know, she could do things and I didn't have to worry about it.
Right. Exactly. That's great. So my big question, do you have a follow-up to this, or where does that stand?
It's an interesting question. I mean, people are asking me that question. There's part of me that really wants to write a sequel, but I've got to come up with a story. So I'm thinking about it. I'm not sure that, I mean, I don't want to go 6 years, you know, for another book. And so the question really is, can I create a sequel in a lot shorter period of time. And, you know, maybe I can, I'm not sure. You know, when I look at Hank Philby Ryan, who just turns out one a year, it's just amazing to me.
Right.
I
think a lot of ways in those 6 years for you were, that was your schooling.
Right.
You know, you learned a lot in that time period that you could now take to your right. second book, which I talked to a lot of authors and they have a very similar path where, you know, the first one, you know, it just, there's a lot to learn. And, and now you're bringing all that knowledge into book two, which, you know, hopefully speeds up the process. One a year is, I don't know, that sounds a little aggressive, but for fiction, right. but it's possible.
Yeah, she had a deal of 3 books.
Yeah.
One a year.
And they usually have teams around them too that are
amazing. Right. Yeah. But
what a great accomplishment. It must be so wonderful for you to bring, you know, your book to life. I have it here as well. But, you know, I know, you know, all the hard work that goes into writing and, you know, it's just wonderful to be able to talk to folks like you that have gone through it and have had success with it. And, you know, use it as a linchpin, hopefully for additional writings, but, you know, just to get the story out there.
Right. And I do want to give a shout out to Walter Robinson, because, I mean, he was nice enough, kind enough to read it and then willing to write, you know, the blurb for me. And okay, so here's the guy that was editor spotlight team. And, you know, I mean, he's highly respected in this town and elsewhere. So, I mean, that meant a lot to me that he was, you know, he's still willing to help me in any way that he can. So that's also been really great, you know, and sort of confidence building and, you know, made me feel like, yeah, there's a good story there. So, yeah.
If you don't mind, I'll read his quote. From the back of the book.
You can keep reading it.
Yeah, this is unputdownable, riveting fiction with a heavy dose of gritty Boston characters, a scheming drug dealer, a crooked cop, and a relentless and randy, an investigative reporter who will stop at nothing to get the story out. Walter V. Robinson. Awesome. Just awesome. So a couple more questions, if you don't mind, if you could take us back to, you know, when you were the reporter at that time, did you have any concern about your own safety getting involved with this?
A little, because again, the drug dealer would show up at my house, my apartment, you know, late at night or whatever. And I mean, he did things like, I mean, I wasn't afraid of him. But, you know, I had no idea sort of, and I was naive about it. I really was. I wasn't really thinking about, okay, who's trailing him? Who's watching him? You know, so the scene in the book where the cops are actually watching, you know, who know that it's probably not that much fiction, but I, you know, I wrote it as fiction. But I mean, he, you know, he brought me jewelry, which, you know, a reporter can't take gifts from, you know, sources. So I, you know, and this is in the book. I mean, I said, no, I can't keep this. He right. wouldn't take it back. So, you know, there were times where, I was a little, I guess, afraid, but not as much as, you know, in the fiction in the novel, you know, writing, walking along and, you know, getting shouted at by, you know, some guys in a car. I mean, that didn't happen. So, again, I mean, there was a certain, I think, trustworthiness that I just had about people in general, you know, even, you know, sources. I think that ultimately, I think he might have been the only convicted felon that, you know, that I ever really interviewed and certainly got to know and, you know, believed his story, et cetera. So, you know, that I think I wasn't too afraid during the story.
What made you want to go into journalism?
Ah, now there's an interesting question. When I was in college, I was deciding between being a lawyer and being a journalist. And I applied to Northwestern, to Medill School of Journalism, the graduate program, and I got in. And wow, that seemed to, okay, make the choice for me. And once I loved it. I loved being a journalist. It was great. I mean, and I had the luxury or the luck or whatever, that I worked both in newspapers, in TV, and in radio. It was a good run. And it went from being a general reporter in Springfield, Massachusetts, to being an editorial director, a job that doesn't even exist anymore, where this was a CBS All News radio station at the time, and they were paying me to say what I thought. And I do have this, I think I'm kind of known for it, of just, you know, saying what I think. I thought.
That's great. What does your family think about your success with the book and the book itself?
I mean, everybody's, you know, excited about it. And I've got my sister-in-law's sister is the illustrator of Fancy Nancy. So, I mean, you know, she's in a whole different level of book success and things like that. But my family's very creative, and I think they appreciate the achievement, and they know how long it took too. So they've been very supportive and grateful, and they're happy.
And tell us about the Emmy that you won.
it was a regional Emmy, and it was, it was for an investigative story. I mean, it was both for me and my boss, you know, at the time. And he, by the way, he also just died. Which is like, oh God, that's weird too. God. So he never got to see book either. But it was under the investigative reporting category. And it was a vote of confidence, and it made me feel great that this had actually gotten to that point where people, not only were they watching it, but they were willing to award my work. So it was great.
Excellent. Well, if people want to reach you or find your book, what is the best way for them to do so?
I would say M. Regenberg, Regenberg. Should I do this? Should I give my email address?
Oh, totally up to you.
Let's say at Comcast.net.
Fantastic. And the book is available on Amazon.
Yes.
So people could buy it there as well. Michael, wonderful to visit with you today. Thank you so much,
Roger,
for spending time, and welcome to the American Real Family.
Yes.
Wait to air this episode.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Roger.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to American Real. For more stories like this one, be sure to stop by AmericanReal.tv. Follow us on all social media to stay up to date with everything American Real. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and contact one of our publishing experts if you're ready to publish your book and become a best-selling author.